This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Jarvis Cocker of Pulp. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, if I know one or two things about you, it is that you love Pulp and Elbow. And I'm so glad that you got the chance to talk to Jarvis again. And he is just like the nicest, most effusive, funny guy. And it was a treat for me to get to sit in on this interview and listen. What was it like to catch up with him again and to talk to him and also to kind of just talk to him as a solo independent person who is a part of this larger project that we're celebrating?
Well, it's Pulp's return after 24 years with a brand new album called More, which came out this year, nominated for a Mercury Prize. They won the Mercury Prize back in 1995 with A Different Class. So 30 years, they were nominated again, which was fantastic. However, I spoke to Jarvis before he even knew he was going to be nominated for a Mercury Prize again. And it was really lovely to be able to chat with him about not only the return of Pulp with this absolutely beautiful record, which is about aging and romance and his new marriage and really sort of bringing back, you know, Candida and Nick and Mark Webber together after Steve Mackey's passing for this really sort of bittersweet and beautiful album, which they've been touring across North America to huge crowds. They played Forest Hill Stadium. I just love nattering with Jarvis. I mean, he's, you know, he's a radio broadcaster himself. He had a Six Music show. He was also done things for BBC Radio 3. He's a fascinating human being. So, you know, just wherever the conversation took us, I was happy to go with Jarvis. So there we go. And not only that, but they offered us a few songs that they did in rehearsal.
Right.
So I had the glory of being able to pick three of those, the first of which is Tina. So on FUV Live Sessions, this is Pulp with Tina.
Skin. Just to wear the t-shirt with the horizontal stripes, the one she wore the night I almost spoke to her. Tina's always attentive to my needs. You got a strong connection, cause we never meet. Tina,
Tina.
Yes, tonight I have been thinking about Tina. Me in the snow 14 years ago, or on the escalators last Saturday. You were wearing rainbow gloves with matching socks. What ladies play
on everyday sexuality.
I have been thinking about scenes from a marriage that never took place. Although I did once buy a ring. Places we never met. Maybe
kisses, your lipstick on my coffee cup, screwing in a charity shop on top of wrapping bags full of donations, the smell of digestive biscuits in the air. Welcome back to Dreamland, we all know your name. T-I-N-A, still needs a book on the train. Yes, tonight I have been thinking about Tina.
I'm Karen Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Pulp with Tina at a rehearsal done some months back. It is found on the band's exquisite eighth album, More, which is Brighton and Otherwise Dire 2025. It is the first studio album from Pulp since 2001's We Love Life. Frontman, singer, songwriter, storyteller, writer, broadcaster is joining me today over Zoom. And I believe we are both in London. I am in Crouch End. Are you in Shepherd's Bush at the moment?
I am in Shepherd's Bush, yes. I thought I could feel your presence.
I will say that one of the best falafel wraps are at Shepherd's Bush Market at Mr. Falafel.
Yes, you're right. Yes, I do have them sometimes, but they can be quite pungent, so you can lose friends if you eat them too often.
Going to Tina, this entire album just is stunning, Jarvis, and I'm so happy for you and Candida and Nick and Mark. And on Tina in particular, you seem to be touching on an idea that sort of sliding doors aspect of life choices. And Tina also appears in Grown Ups as well. I know that you wrote the lyrics for this album ahead of time. Some of the songs date back to This Is Hardcore, one in particular. Others, like Hymn of the North, developed a few years back. But when you were sitting and writing these lyrics, was there something that was a catalyst that was nagging at you that you felt that you needed to write about?
Not really. It was more... You mentioned Hymn of the North there, and that was a song that kind of started things off, because we were playing and I just thought, why don't we try playing a new song? And that song had been written, as you said, it had been written in 2019 for a stage production. And so there was music and also words, and I gave the music to our string arranger, who was doing the strings for the tour, and we just worked on it during the tour. And we played it in Sheffield, and people clapped after it. So I just thought, okay, this could be a good idea to come up with new songs. I did want to do a record, I think. I didn't really want to admit that to the band, because I thought that would frighten them off, because the last two Pulp albums had taken a long time, and that was basically my fault because of me changing things and not being sure about things. So I thought I would keep quiet about wanting to do a record. And I just said, oh, well, let's see if we can do any more songs that we could play live. And also, I didn't know whether we would come up with enough good songs, really. So we had a few writing sessions, and then I kind of thought, okay, yeah, this could work. And I got our manager, Jeanette Lee, to come and listen to the songs, just to make sure that it wasn't wishful thinking on my part, which is important, you know, because you want things to be good, but just wanting them to be good doesn't mean they are going to be good. So you do need outside opinion sometimes.
You had been touring quite a bit, and you were singing songs in your 20s and 30s and 40s. Mm. So to have the opportunity to write, to sing now songs that represented where you are now, where the band is now, did that feel also that was something that was important to do? Because it's funny, when you listen back to Help the Age, you perform live, it's now you're singing it, and you wrote it back when you were 35 years old or thereabouts, and now you're singing it presently. Did you really want to sing songs that were, that, you know, speaking of your present experience?
Well, to go back to Help the Aged, that's quite interesting that you brought that one up, because that's the one song that we kept all the songs in the same keys as they've been written, and even though my voice has got lower with age, as everybody's voice does. And the chorus of Help the Aged is the only song that I can't get the last, at the end of the chorus, the last line, funny how it all falls away, has fallen away. I can't get to those notes anymore. So I actually get the audience to help me there. So they really are helping the aged in that song. So, well, that was really the test. As I say, I think the reason that the Pulp albums, that the last two, This Is Hardcore and Wheel of Life, took a long time was because I was having trouble convincing myself that what I was writing about was worth saying. So I would change things and re-sing things and stuff like that. But the one thing that I said to myself before committing to doing a record was that I would have to write the words first, because I've kind of realized that that is my job. You know, I do write musical parts to the songs as well, but my main job in the band is to come up with words and to come up with the vocal melodies. And so I just said, okay, if I can do that, and if I feel like it's something that's worth saying at this time in my life, then we'll do it, you know. So, and that was good. So all the, I used to find making records quite stressful because I was always putting off writing the words until the last minute and all things like that. And to have done all the worrying before we actually went in the studio made things a lot easier. And that's why we ended up recording the record pretty quickly, because we've got all of that kind of soul searching angst bit out of the way in private before we started spending money.
It took you just about 3 weeks to record the album, and you worked with James Ford, who has worked with Black Country New Road, Fontaine's DC, Last Dinner Party, so many others. He's had some health battles recently, but what was it about James who felt, you know, had you known him for a while? Why did you want to work with him in particular?
Emma Smith and Richard Jones. So they're two people who are kind of in the band. They're not, obviously they're not people who've been in the band since the beginning, but they're in the touring band now. And they are in an occasional group with Richard Jones. So I knew that I could get in touch with him easily. I had heard his work and I was impressed with his production, really, because he didn't seem to have a particular sound. And I remembered that was one of the reasons that we worked with Chris Thomas back in the Common People, Different Class days. We knew that we needed a producer who would kind of give us a bigger sound, but I didn't want it to be like, for instance, which somebody suggested Trevor Horn. And Trevor Horn productions are always, you can just tell that the Trevor Horn productions, you know, they've always got a particular sound, but Chris Thomas always just seemed to make people's best records. He just made people sound more like themselves. And I think that James Ford is a bit like that. You know, he gets the best out of whoever he's working with. So I thought, okay, that would be good. So I sent the demos via Emma and Richard to James, and he liked them. And then I met him in person and we decided it was a good idea.
You know, when Pulp slipped into Glastonbury, you surprised everyone. You started your set with Sorted for Ease and Whiz from Different Class, which was also, I believe, 30 years earlier when you also were the surprise band for the Stone Roses at Glastonbury. You also, that's what the song was about, basically, correct? That there was a symmetry there, marking the 30th anniversary of Different Class at Glastonbury today, this year as well.
Well, that was the very first time that we performed Sorted for Ease and Whiz. I think we also premiered Disco 2000 and Misshapes at that concert, which I kind of admire that in a way, because when you're standing in for a band at the last minute and people haven't necessarily come there to see you, I guess you're supposed to play your hits. But we'd only really had one hit. We'd only had Common People. Right. I mean, so we'd been in the studio. That's where we got the phone call. We were in the studio recording Different Class as quickly as we could. And then we got this phone call saying, do you want to headline Glastonbury next week or something like that? So we stopped recording whatever we were recording and discussed it with Chris Thomas. And we decided we had to do it. So then we started rehearsing in the studio for the concert, which was officially the most expensive rehearsals we've ever done. But
So being back there this year, it must have been really lovely to be bringing new music, and especially significantly because so much of Steve Mackey's spirit is invested in this album too. You've dedicated more to him. What does that mean to you, Canada, Nick, and Mark in terms of the future of Pulp? This album has been greeted with so much excitement by so many people, longtime fans and new fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. When you make a record, you never know what people are going to make of it and whether they're going to like it or whether they're even going to notice it, especially today where there's so much coming at you all the time, you know. So it's been amazing to have such a reaction to it. We may try and play some new songs when we come and play in America. The record's only been out for a couple of months, but I think it's good. If you're in a kind of creative mood, it's good to keep doing that. So who knows? But it was really good to go back to Glastonbury. I wasn't as nervous as the first time we played it when we stood in for the Stone Roses, but it still felt significant because that is the place, that's where we first found out that we were popular. You know, it was the first concert that we'd played after Common People had been a hit. So it was the first time we'd ever heard an audience sing the words to a song back to us. So it felt, to come back 30 years later, it did feel like some kind of, significant moment. So I'm glad it happened.
A song like Grown Ups, which has the absolutely brilliant line, "I'm not aging, no, I'm just right. I am just ripening, and life's too short to drink." Love that line. That's an older song. Isn't that song about 30 years old, and you began writing it for this hardcore?
Only the music was written and the title. So we did an instrumental demo of it, which I was then supposed to come up with the words and sing them over the top. And as I say, apart from getting the title, I couldn't come up with a melody and I couldn't come up with any words. So it just got put on the shelf. And occasionally I would listen to that and think that could be a good song if I could actually think what it was going to be about. And then in the wake of us playing, when we got back together in 2011, after that tour, I wrote some words for it and actually took them to Steve Mackey, who you mentioned. He had a studio and I demoed it. And he kind of looked at me with a mystified look on his face afterwards and said, "Why are you reviving a song that's already 10 years old?" So I kind of gave up then. And then I just thought, when it came to us doing this album more, I thought, well, if the song is ever going to get done, now's the time to do it. So we rehearsed it. And then weirdly, the vocal that's on that's on the record is just one take of it. James Ford has this working method where after you've recorded the song, he just says, will you do a guide vocal so I can see where the gaps are and things like that? And so I just sang it a couple of times and that's it. You know, after 28 years, it just kind of just seemed to form in the course of about 5 minutes, which there must be something poetic about that, I suppose.
Wow.
And you'll be the mum, and we'll make out, we know what it is that
generation, finally part of the pub conversation, which somehow leads to mature life decisions, like the one that I heard of from Jeremy Scissors, who said he moved to the motorway because it was good for commuting. And I laughed in his face because I thought he was joking. And then I looked in his eyes and I saw he was not joking. No, he was trying. Trying so, so hard to act just like a grown-up. Everybody, are you sure? Night, I had a dream about a new planet that had been discovered. And looking through a powerful telescope, we could see the inhabitants, and they seemed to be having a really good time. So we built a rocket, and I was on it. And we were all put in suspended animation for the duration of the journey. And when we landed on that distant planet, we all awoke, and we discovered that we'd all lost our memories. And we gazed back at the place we'd just come from. And everybody there seemed to be having a really good time. But we couldn't return because the rocket didn't have enough fuel left in it. Why am I telling you this story? I don't remember. Why did Melky decide to come out of the jungle to his doctors and nurses and aunties and uncles and families and roundheads and dogs and vicars?
I think people underestimate how hard it was to pull together a weekly 3-hour free format music show, Sunday Service, which was your absolutely brilliant BBC Radio 6 music show. Spoke to your friend Richard Hawley a couple weeks ago, who talked about how difficult that was for you. And I'm wondering, though, do you miss at all that platform of live radio as sort of a supplement to your life? Or was that really just a lot of work?
No. I mean, I loved it because it was, I had total freedom on that show. You know, we didn't even have any adverts or any trailers for other people's shows. So I just had these couple of hours where I could try and lull people into a kind of semi-conscious state. Because it was a Sunday afternoon thing, and I liked the type that, you know, you mentioned it being live radio. That was very important to me. I mean, I did pre-record it a couple of times, but I really did enjoy the thing of it being a performance. So you would go in, I would have a cup of coffee, even though it was a very low energy show, but I would have a cup of coffee, put the first record on, and then you just go into this thing. And, you know, you do it. When you speak into a microphone and you know that people listen to it as you're saying it, It is like a performance. And the thing that I like about radio is that you can, people can be doing things whilst they're listening to the show. They can be washing up, or they can be, a lot of people used to get their Sunday meal together whilst they listen to that program. So you're part of people's everyday life. And that's similar to what was, you know, part of my impetus of wanting to be a singer in the first place, was to make records that would get played on the radio, and then you would be the soundtrack of people's lives. And I've always thought that was a kind of magical thing about pop music, how it can, you know, how it is if you're wandering around and then suddenly you hear a song and it really takes you back to when you used to listen to that song, or when you first heard it. It really brings back memories in a very vivid way. And I loved the idea of being part of that thing.
You know the challenges that public radio is having right now in the States. So NPR, in particular, NPR affiliates like us, why is public radio so important to a band, for example, like Pulp? You know, in terms of being able to do what you did on the BBC, in terms of being able to support music in other realms?
On a really basic level, what I loved about the show that I did was I got a chance to create a mood, and if you're getting interrupted by commercial breaks or adverts for other shows, that kind of spoils that. And that's what I kind of look for in a work of art, really. You want it to take you away somewhere. You want it to take you away from whether you should have a new car, or whether you should change your detergent, or shouldn't you have a new carpet by now in your life, or whatever. I kind of want to kind of like forget about that, and I want to go and inhabit some kind of spirit realm for a bit, or just float around imagining things, you know. And it's nice to have a break, you know, because everyday life is okay, but it's nice to have a rest from it now and again.
You pose a very good query or advice in your song Slow Jams that I thought I would paraphrase a little bit, condense, and ask you. When love slows down, when you're going through hell, how do you keep going? That's what I'm asking you. There's many songs about love on More. How do you keep going when you're going through hell? I'm kind of wondering, given the times we live in, how you look forward to each day.
I think cutting yourself off from, which is probably not a great thing to say since I'm on the radio now, but cutting yourself off from the media a bit is quite a good idea, because you that can just send you down a kind of rabbit hole of thinking everything is terrible. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to sound kind of corny or whatever, but meditation is a good thing. Because that's more a kind of a focusing in on realizing that a lot of what makes you feel good or bad is actually coming from you. I mean, obviously, things that are going on in the outside world have an effect on you as well. But the way that you process those things, or how much notice you take of them, also makes them affect you more or less. And so meditation can give you this thing of, it's a bit like a reset or something. You can be feeling overwhelmed or whatever, but if you kind of get to quieten down all this kind of chatter that goes on in your mind and realize that that's not actually you, that can actually allow, sometimes it allows important thoughts to be heard, and also it kind of gets you to start the day from a place of zero rather than waking up and already being a kind of like 8.5 on the Richter scale of being worried.
Will there be more after this album?
Maybe. I mean, Pulp, you know, we never split up. We just kind of go quiet for a bit. if you just have to see, I think it is up to us, as in we have to write songs, but it's just, as long as it seems like it's worth it and we are enjoying it, then I guess you would be silly to stop it, you know. And the fact, you know, the fact that we've done this record, you know, it could have just been like nobody would have taken any notice of it. But I feel that people have liked it, and we've enjoyed making it. So it's kind of brought us back to life in a way, you know. So yeah. Let's see. I don't want to jinx it by talking about it too much.
It is so good to have you back, and all very excited that you're going to be coming back to New York. Jarvis, thank you for your time today.
All right, Cara. Thank you very much for speaking to me. Enjoy Crouch End.
Cheers.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
How about you just keep going? She crossed a line.
And that's Pulp's Jarvis Cocker in conversation for FUV Live Sessions and live music featuring the entire band. A big thank you to Jarvis for chatting with me and sharing songs from rehearsal with us for this session. Thanks as well to Rough Trade Records and The Beggars Group. Megan Suma produced this episode and is the executive producer of our show. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. Please rate and review the show if you like what you hear, and you can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer of this episode, Kara Manning.